Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Scott Guthrie, a neonatologist and the previous infant medical director for TIPQC. Some of our episodes are for everyone, parents, families, anyone curious about healthcare works in Tennessee. Others, they're a little more for us in the trenches, doctors, nurses, and all those people that help out around the hospital, like chaplains. Today's one of those. But here's the thing, even if you've never set foot in a hospital, you're going to want to stick around for this one. You'll hear stories that break your heart and then put it back together. Fair warning, this one's a bit heavy. We're talking about loss, grief, the weight of holding a tiny hand that might not make it. But we're also talking about hope, meaning, and how we keep going when the nights are long. And I couldn't ask for a better guide for our guest today. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is so honored to welcome Chaplain Scott Bloodworth. Scott, you want to say a quick hello, and then I'll tell everyone why you're the perfect person for this conversation?
I don't know about perfect, but hello, everyone. It's good to be with you today.
Yeah, man, I'm really glad you're here today. I have known you for years. You have always been that quiet guy in the NICU hallway who somehow makes the chaos feel still. You just come up, ask us how we're doing, put an arm around us, give us a hug. For 15 years, you have been the lead chaplain at Jackson-Madison County General Hospital. You started off as a volunteer. Now you're leading spiritual care across the entire system. He's there for every unit, but his heart, I'm going to tell you guys, I think it's in the NICU. With perinatal loss and walking families through bereavement. At the same time, for the past 19 years, he's been the pulpit minister at a church in Milan, Tennessee, which is also his hometown. He's been preaching, counseling, and building community. Scott's a Freed Hardeman University grad with a doctorate in behavioral health, and his research is on fathers in the NICU. It has changed how we see dads in crisis. He's married to Martha, raised in Milan, and known for one thing above all, showing up with quiet strength, with hope, with the kind of presence that says you're not alone. So Scott, welcome. I'm so glad we're finally doing this on the record, and I'm really happy to be talking to another Scott.
Yeah, we've done this quite often in the background, haven't we?
Man, we sure have. And you have seen it all from the NICU to the maternity ward. You've been there when miracles have taken place, and you've been there for goodbyes. I'm just curious, what is one moment with a parent that has stopped you in your tracks? And then what keeps you coming back day after day?
Wow, there are so many. It seems like every event that we have, there's something special about that moment or something that impacts my life. And the lives of the nurses, the doctors. But one in particular, there was a situation to where we had a hospice baby we knew was probably not going to survive long outside of the womb. And the team was there, your team was there. And I was out in the hallway talking to the dad before he went in. And I said, what is one hope you could have? And he said, I just want to hear her cry. And all of the indicators were there that her lungs were not going to be developed and she was not going to be able to produce any sound. He went into the room for delivery and I was standing out in the hallway when I heard the loudest cry that I believe I've ever heard.
Wow.
And for me, that was a miracle. And when the dad came out, he and I just kind of wept together and laughed together, and it was amazing. There's moments like that constantly, that a horrible, dark situation turns into something that is bright and memorable.
All right. So, you know, your doctoral work was all about dads in the NICU, and I found this really fascinating. I really enjoyed talking to you about this. And I want you to tell our audience, you know, what did you learn about how fathers find their place, both spiritually and emotionally, when their baby's fighting to survive?
You know, it's interesting. I just came a moment ago from a situation where, you know, all dads struggle because it seems like from our youth, regardless of what society would indicate, men are taught that we are to take care of two things. We are to provide care for our wife, and we're to provide care for our child, to protect them, to nourish them. And in a case like this, that goes out the window. I mean, dad is in a very bad spot. He cannot protect his child, and he cannot do anything really outside of hold his wife's hand to bring comfort to her. And that puts the dad in a very bad spot. So, I mean, I hear it all the time from a dad that will say, you know, I've got to be strong for them. And that strength for your spouse really is being there with her in her time of sorrow. I tell dads, if you want to show how much you love your wife, cry with her. Take the time to cry with her. It acknowledges her grief, and it allows for you to empty your heart of grief.
That's good. It's really good. That's powerful. I think that's a powerful message to make sure we emphasize to fathers in the NICU when they're dealing with stuff like this and just really wondering and questioning.
Yeah, I run through it all the time, Scott. You know, I very often will ask people if they have ever seen the movie The Green Mile, and you have the healer, John Coffey, who takes away people's pain, but he never keeps it inside. He always lets that out. And in a natural way, God has done that for us. He's designed our bodies. Me being a Judeo-Christian, I believe this. He has designed our bodies in such a way, that being the tear duct, because we all have them, male and female, that purges our system. It allows us to rid ourselves of those bad feelings, if you will.
Yeah. Let me talk to you about another one that I think is also designed to help us get rid of bad feelings and just cry out for help. And that's specifically with prayer. This past year, July 24, there was an article in Forbes magazine called Four Reasons Why Faith May Actually Heal. And there's one point that stuck with me after reading this. It's that regular prayer can ease depression, anxiety, and loneliness. You've prayed with parents, I know, because I've seen you, at 2 a.m. in the morning at their bedside with whatever situation might be going on. What do you think the purpose of prayer is in situations like this? And what's the difference you've seen prayer make in these moments?
Well, again, being a person of faith, I believe that God hears our prayers, and if it fits into His overall will, most certainly, we get answers, either yes, no, not now. But from a biological, spiritual sense, I guess you could say, it certainly focuses our mind on a task so that it shuts out all of the surrounding noise, all of the things that are going on around us, the sounds of the machinery. It gives us a sense of calmness, a sense of self in the fact that this is beyond me. I cannot fix this. And that's what we all want to do. Doctors, nurses, dads, we want to fix something that is unfixable or outside of our control. So if prayer does nothing else, it focuses our attention on the fact that this is beyond me. And I need help that is outside of my person.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, the article goes on and it talks about how the faith that we're developing and the people that work with us to help us develop our faith through these difficult situations, it actually helps us build better coping skills. And so when a family gets this devastating news that your baby may not make it, how do you help them take this next breath? How do you begin to weave a faith story or help them develop their faith in this situation? What do you think sort of helps the most for them when they're dealing with these things?
I think, again, it goes back to that aspect of focus. It is hard. I'm a person that believes that, I don't know whether you call it a gut feeling, a movement of the spirit, however you want to say it, each situation is different, but most of the time, if you can get the individual to focus where they are right now, where are you right now? You're here at point A. How do you get to point C? You can't just jump to point C. You've got to go through B. And again, I watch or I've seen so many movies and I pick things out that are so good. They speak so much. Maybe it's the pastor in me. I don't know. But it's like a scene in the movie Apollo 13 starring Tom Hanks.
That was a good one.
Yeah. And it kind of documents the event surrounding failed moon landing attempt and survival of the Apollo 13 mission. But there's a point in that where two of the astronauts basically are losing control and they start arguing and yelling at each other. And the commander finally has to tell his two crewmates, look, there are 800 things that have to happen for us to get home. And we're on number three and you're worried about number 600. So he kind of took that time. I take that same thought to look, don't focus way down here. We've got to get past this point. So I focus all of their attention or attempt to right there in that moment of time.
Yeah. Wow. That's good. Yeah. I'm just curious, what advice would you give to medical professionals when it comes to these faith issues? I mean, should we just leave this to the professionals like yourself, or is there a place for us to work with people and help with people?
No, I think it's very engaging. And it's been my experience, Scott, if a doctor is spiritual most of the time. Now, you and I both know there are going to be situations that it's not going to be applicable. But most of the time, I hear feedback from my doctor prayed with me. My doctor spent time to hold my hand and to remind me that regardless of what happens, I'm not going to be by myself. So I think it's vital, actually, for doctors to be able, if nothing else, just that, what we call a ministry of presence, just to be in that room, put your hand on the person's back and say, you know, you're not by yourself. You're surrounded by a great number of people.
Hmm. Scott, you've been on the bereavement team too at Jackson Madison County General Hospital. In fact, I love the name. It's called Butterflies Embrace. And several years ago, we did a podcast with Butterflies Embrace for TIPQC. So if the audience is interested in listening to that, you can go back and find it. And so what Butterflies Embrace does for our audience is when there's a stillbirth, when there's a NICU loss, when there's concern that some event may lead up to that situation, we get your team involved. And the part of that is, I think, to help you just be present and walk through that with the family, but also just make sense of things. What things have you seen that have been helpful in situations like that, like rituals, words, gestures, just things that can bring some type of comfort in these really difficult time frames?
The first thing is to let them know they're not by themselves. You mentioned Butterflies Embrace, great, great team. We're blessed to be able to have that team. I'm just a small part or one part of that team. The first thing is to let them know they're not by themselves. We, whoever enters that room first, whether it's myself or one of the other team members, is to let them know, look, we're your family while you're in this hospital. We're going to protect you. We're going to run interference for you. We're going to help you walk through this, and we're going to take care of the things that you don't need to focus on at this very moment in time. We want you to focus on this moment in time with your spouse. I don't know how to say it, the time that you have in connection with this child, especially if we know that the child is no longer alive and mom is going to have to go through the procedures, whether that is natural birth or cesarean section, that child's about to be separated from her. And even though it may not be alive, it is still part of her. She's carrying that. And that separation is going to bring a great deal of anxiety to both her and her husband. So we let them know, hey, you're not by yourself. We're going to do things, because at the end of an adult's life, we have all of these memories that we cherish. You know, mom or dad was here at my first recital or whatever, you know, my first touchdown or whatever great moment is in your life. So you have those memories. With a child, there are no memories other than knowing that you're carrying that child You can feel his foot in your bladder. Those type of things that are make you smile. So we make memories. We take handprints on canvas. We do molds of baby's hand and feet, three-dimensional molds. So mom and dad have that tactile connection with their child, even though their child is no longer there. They're still a mom. They're still a dad. And they will always be a mom and a dad. So these little things are so vitally important. And then, of course, as time goes on, we have memorial services that we sponsor. Mom and dads get to come back together to spend time together. We have opportunities, what we call the Build-A-Bear. It's basically a Build-A-Bear program where mom and dad get to have a stuffed bear and we weight that bear to exactly their child's weight at birth. And they hold that bear and it brings them comfort. Yes, I'm sure it brings sorrow, but at the same time, it's like, this is what my baby weighed. And they have those memories. They carry those memories with them always. And they always remember, if nothing else, they remember the love that was cast in their direction.
Wow. And one of the things I know that your team does too is that heartbeat bear.
Yes.
I've always been really, really impressed with that. You want to explain that real quick about the heartbeat bear too?
Yes. If we know that the child is in distress, if the child comes in, if it's a hospice baby and we know the baby may not survive long in the womb or long after birth, or if we know that in neonatal, if we know a child is losing grasp on this life and we know that they're going to be leaving this life very soon, then we will come in with a small recording device. We record that baby's heartbeat and we place that inside of a stuffed animal. We used to just call it a heartbeat bear, but now we have giraffes and sloths and everything. And we give that to the mother, and at any time she can squeeze that bear or whatever, and she can hear her baby's heartbeat. And again, I would think from my standpoint, it is both painful, but such a great comfort. And I've heard that as well from mom and dad. They'll cry as they hear that heartbeat, but they are so grateful that we were able to do that for them.
I love that. So I think it's important to just emphasize that these tactile things,
yes,
these small little things can just be a whole lot for these families as these early days turn into the months and years afterwards. Let me focus on a couple different things. I want to just ask you some questions about the healthcare team, and then I want to go into the parents, both the mom and dad specifically, for a little bit. But just hearing you talk about the being present, what would your recommendations be for doctors or nurses during times like this? Like, what can we do better? What have you seen done poorly that you're like, please don't do that in the future? What advice would you give for us?
Advice that I could give to medical teams is try not to talk over mom and dad's head as devices are going off. Describe what's going on in layman's terms, because so often it's not that we are, what's the word? I don't want to say arrogant. It's the fact that we get so used to talking to one another and we all understand what's going on. Mom and dad do not always understand what's going on. We know what alerts are important, which signals are not. Mom and dad are in turmoil and they're anxious. So we need to be able to speak to them as we would talk to anyone that is unfamiliar with anything going on around them. Secondly, don't try to explain why things are happening the way they are. Don't try to make too much sense of the situation, because the situation is senseless. You understand this, and I understand this, that bad things happen and we can't prevent them from happening. And therefore, it doesn't make sense. We understand why someone who has abused drugs all their life or has not taken good care of their body all their life, we understand why their bodies fail. For an infant, we don't always understand. A perfectly healthy baby and something has gone wrong, and we don't have an explanation for that. And we just need to say, I don't know why this has happened. It's not your fault. And we can talk more about that in a moment. You know, it's not your fault. Unfortunately, it just happens. And sometimes we get so intent in trying to help people make sense of the situation that we forget not every situation makes sense, and we have to admit that to ourselves and to the people we're caring for.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I want to go on and talk about that concept of guilt that I think you were introducing there for a second. I mean, even just yesterday, there was a case I was dealing with a dad who was, I could just tell he had this sense of, did I do everything right? Am I at fault here? Did I get her here in time type deal? And I know that these moms and dads, that they carry some type of guilt with them into these situations. Was it the choices we made? Was it because I didn't pay attention to these things and doubted if I was feeling what I was really supposed to be feeling?
Yeah.
What is your advice for healthcare workers? And then how do you deal with them to help them let go of this guilt without brushing off the pain that they're feeling?
Yeah, you're probably going to understand this more than anybody, Scott, because you're a very fine doctor. I'm not just saying that, you know, to make you feel good, but you are. You're a very fine doctor. You're very knowledgeable. So it's very hard for us to admit that we don't have control of the situation. We want to find fault. Some way we want to assign blame as human beings. I mean, I see it all the time. You see it all the time on Facebook and other social media where people don't understand why this person died. Well, he fell out of an airplane from 17,000 feet without a parachute, but they want to assign blame somewhere down the line. And things happen that are beyond our control. And that guilt comes when we start saying, well, I could have done something differently. We're trying to assume control. We, in that statement, I could have done something differently, means that I have control of the situation and I should have maintained control of it, when that's the farthest thing from the truth. We don't have control of situations, genetics. We don't have any control over that. We don't have control over just a bad deal. It sounds so harsh when I say it this way. But I talked to a dad not too long ago, and he said, God hates me for the way that I've lived my life. And I had to look at him, and again, it sounds harsh, but I said, no, this deal just stinks. You did nothing wrong. This is just the universe, and it stinks. And he found comfort in that. He said, thank you for saying that, because it allowed him to let go of that guilt.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Good thing to, I think I better remember that. This universe just thinks sometimes. That's good. So just thinking about this a little bit more, you know, maybe there's a mom listening to us right now. Maybe she's on bed rest. She's staring at a monitor. She's in preterm labor and she's praying that she gets extra time, that her baby pulls through whatever is going on. What is one thing you want to say to her today you want her to hear today?
First and foremost, love yourself. Moms really want to blame themselves. I've been a poor mother. I'm a horrible, I don't know how else to say, I'm a horrible incubator for my child. I've done something wrong in my body. Love yourself. You've done the best that you can do. So first and foremost, love yourself. Secondly, love your baby. The time that you have with that child is a gift. And that's true for all of us, whether that's hours, days, or years, the time that we have is a gift. Cherish that moment, savor it, and hold on to that, and then allow us to help you hold on to that as we are able to provide those things to you.
So since your expertise is in dads too, we can't forget the dads. So what would you say to him?
Wow. Hold on to your mate. As I've said earlier, cry with her. Memorize every square inch, every image of her interacting with your baby. If that baby is stillborn, still focus on her interaction and tell her what a great mother she is. That is really going to help her in the long run. It's going to help her psyche. It's going to help her spirit. If you will say, you are a great mother, no one can ever take that from you.
Wow.
It will help her beyond measure. And that's what we want to do, right? And it'll help you know that you're a part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. So I think just the power of some of the words that you've shared with us, can go a long way. And I think that's a couple things you've said today I'm going to put into my repertoire of when I'm dealing with these situations. I'm going to be sure to say to people, because I think that can be incredibly helpful in these situations.
Well, I hope it's helped.
Yeah, no, it's helped me at least. So as we wrap up and we're talking about the power of words, let's say, Scott, you've got a giant billboard, and I always love ending our podcast with these, because there's been some just fascinating things people have said and come up with as we've had some of these discussions over the years. So if you've got this billboard on I-40, I don't know, you can put it between Memphis and Jackson, or you can put it between Jackson and Nashville if you want to, with a message for everyone who passes this to see, what would your words say?
Bathroom ahead. No, I'm just kidding. You wished everybody could be kind to each other. What one of my coworkers says, Miss Addie, just be a good human. I would say love each other more today than you did yesterday.
That's good. And I think we could all use those words and put those into practice more and more every day with what's going on in the world. Day. Yeah, exactly. So, Scott, man, I absolutely love it. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for your heart, your wisdom, and for reminding us that even in the hardest places, hope has a voice. And you have certainly been that hope to many, many people, including myself. So to our listeners, you know, thank you for being here. If today was heavy, we hope it was also healing. Until next time, this is Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee. And be sure to take care of each other. And like Brother Scott said, love each other more and more every day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.